Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with a longtime Democratic campaign strategist and political media consultant, Bill Zimmerman, and discuss what Obama has to do tonight to make up for not challenging the overnight brand new centrist Romney, who repudiated almost his entire campaign so far and won over a lot of swing voters in the last debate. Then we will speak with Michael Greenberger, the former director of the Division of Trading and Markets at the Commodities Futures Trading Commission, about the asset stripper posing as a job creator, Mitt Romney. We will discuss the extent to which Democrats have failed to inform the public about how Wall Street is fleecing the average American at the gas pump and the kitchen table by driving up the price of commodities, a parasitic and predatory activity that is likely to get worse in a Romney administration. Then finally, Chrystia Freeland joins us. She is the editor of Thomson Reuters Digital and the author of the new book, Plutocrats, The Rise of the New Global Super-Rich and the Fall of Everyone Else. We will discuss the disdain that Romney expressed for the 47% that the super-rich share and their irrational anger and hatred of Obama that has them throwing money at Romney to defeat a president who has been so good to them. And joining us now is Bill Zimmerman, an author and longtime activist and one of the nation's most experienced political media consultants, who is the co-founder of Zimmerman and Markman Incorporated. Previously, he was a strategic communications consultant to MoveOn.org, and in the 1980s, he specialized in candidate races. His successful clients included Senator Tim Worth, Senator Gary Hart, and Governor Tony Anaya. He's the author of Troublemaker, a memoir from the front lines of the 60s. Welcome to Background Briefing, Bill Zimmerman.
Thank you, Ian. Glad to be here.
And on the eve of this second and very crucial presidential debate, you've obviously been there in the back rooms with candidates, having worked on a number of Senate and presidential campaigns for Democrats. What would your advice be to the president, given that he was so roundly criticized by his own party for not manning up in the last one and not taking on Romney's blizzard of lies? I'm just curious how you can refute a blizzard of lies at the same time get your own agenda across.
Well, that's a good question. I think you have to look at these presidential debates in the same way that a campaign manager looks at television advertising. You have to first consider who the audience you're trying to reach is and what the best message for reaching those people might be. The president tonight needs to speak to voters who are undecided, and he needs to speak to voters who support him but are less motivated and may not turn out on Election Day. In other words, he's got to fire up his base and try to convert the few undecideds that are still out there. Most of those people don't necessarily want to see a fire-breathing candidate. Most of them, when the candidates in a debate start arguing with each other, get turned off to both. So the president has to guard against being too aggressive tonight. Many of his supporters want to see him come out swinging against Romney based on the performance in the last debate, but that isn't necessarily the best way to win over the voters that he still has to convince to vote for him. He needs to project an image of the future that's positive. He needs to tell these voters that the slow, steady progress that his administration has made is the best bet for the future. A lot of these voters are going to be tempted to adopt a quick-fix solution to their economic problems, which remain severe. And Romney is projecting a quick-fix solution, which is tempting to those voters, given the economic suffering that they've endured for the last 4 years since the recession. Obama has to explain to them that slow, steady progress is a much better strategy for the future than the quick fix that Romney is trying to tempt them with. It's a little bit like the race between the tortoise and the hare. The hare stands to get there faster, but that path comes with greater risks, and the slow, steady progress that the president has made is a better bet. Now, that's a hard sell, though, to people who are suffering from the economic disasters that this country's endured in the last 4 years. So he's got to walk a line between being inspirational, projecting realistic solutions for the future, and taking advantage of the fact that the public trusts him more than they trust Romney. They know him better. They like him more. All of the polls are showing that most voters will trust Obama at much higher levels than Romney. So he's got to take advantage of that. A lot of his supporters, especially people like you and I and the listeners of KPFK, would like to see a very aggressive populist president in this debate. But that's not who this president is. And we can't ask him to change his personality just because Romney performed well in the last debate. I think the other thing we can look for tonight is an attempt by the president to debunk some of Romney's newly found moderate positions. In that last debate, we saw a very different Romney than we had seen in the primary, someone who was moving to the center of the political spectrum from extremes on the right. Most of these undecided voters aren't that familiar with the Romney of the past, and the Romney of the present, the new moderate Romney, will appear interesting to people and credible to the voters that both candidates are targeting in this debate. So I think the president has to do something to remind people of who Romney was until the last debate. That is, he has to remind them of some of the positions that he's taken, especially the extreme hard right positions that he's now trying to repudiate. So I think the president has to take advantage of a couple of opportunities this evening to point out to viewers that Romney was taking positions quite different only a couple of months ago than those he's likely to be taking in the debate tonight.
Well, Bill Zimmerman, again, author, longtime activist, one of the nation's most experienced political media consultants, and he has worked on a number of successful Senate and presidential campaigns. What you're telling us is what he should have done in the last debate. So you got to make up for that, because there's no question that Romney made a very clever tactical decision to suddenly become a centrist on the first debate, not earlier as most political pros expected him to pivot yes. back. And of course, he made the calculation that a lot of people will be seeing him for the first time. And in fact, 70 million people saw him. And clearly that is why he's had this bump in the polls. It does make you wonder about the extent to which people pay attention in this country. But I recall when I hosted you and Dan Schneer at the UCLA Hemmer Forum talking about political campaigns, that what was most disturbing, what you both told us, is that American democracy is about most of the money that's raised by candidates from special interests pouring into swing states, which is about 20% of the country. They only know that the election's going on. We barely know what's happening here in California. And then as you get closer to the election in the last few weeks, the swing voters, or as they are euphemistically called, the low information voters, are the ones that you target. And they are, you know, frankly, not really particularly, what can I say? The euphemism is low information voters. But the notion that the electorate that we're targeting, or that professionals are targeting, is so capricious and so fickle and so ill-informed is incredibly depressing.
Well, it is depressing, and that's what's happened to our electoral system with regard to the presidency, because we elect the president not with a national election, but with 50 separate state elections. The presidency is under the control of the Electoral College. When you have separate state elections, you can ignore those states where you know the outcome in advance. States like New York and California will vote overwhelmingly Democratic in a presidential election, just as a state like Texas will vote overwhelmingly Republican. Once you know that, you can narrow down the field to, in this race, it's only been 7 or 8 states. And those states receive all of the TV advertising and all of the focus of presidential visits. But within those states, you're actually only interested in a very small minority of voters. The last 5% or so who tonight remain undecided or persuadable in this election. And if you think about who an undecided persuadable voter is in a place like Ohio that's been bombarded by a deluge of political advertising for weeks and months right now, if you remain undecided in that environment, you're a pretty disinterested voter, someone who doesn't care much about the issues or doesn't understand them. And it's in the hands of such people that we leave the decision as to who will be our next president. It's not the best way to run a government or elect a leader.
And Bill Zimmerman, my fear here is that in 2004, the election was close and it was decided in Ohio. And there's a lot of evidence that all kinds of voter suppression went on in Ohio, and that that Kerry should have won, but he would have ended up in a difficult situation where he would have won the Electoral College. But Bush, I think, was 2.4 million ahead in the popular vote.
Yes.
Obviously, Florida didn't bother Bush and the Republicans, the fact that they were 660,000 behind in the popular vote, but yet won the Electoral College by somewhat dubious means, or actually by the intervention of the Supreme Court. We could end up with a similar situation, could we not, where Obama wins the Electoral College but may not win the popular vote?
Well, that's possible. It's unusual. The example you pointed out in 2004 is probably the best historical example of what could happen. I was working in Ohio trying to carry the state for Kerry in 2004. And those of us who were there were convinced that we won the state. And it wasn't just voter suppression. It was actually cheating that took place under the leadership of the state's then Secretary of State, Kenneth Blackwell, a Republican, who was running the election apparatus in Ohio at the time. And you're right to point out that if Kerry had carried Ohio, he would have become the president and would have lost the general election by over 2 million votes. And that was because of the strength of the southern vote. Bush had won the states in the old Confederacy by a margin of 5.5 million votes. Kerry carried the rest of the country by 2 million votes. So because the conservative Republican ideology is so overwhelmingly popular in the southeastern portion of the United States, the old Confederacy that was defeated in the Civil War, they have come to exert an undue influence on national elections for the presidency.
But doesn't this lead one to be concerned about this election, given that Karl Rove was the architect of the theft of the 2004 election in Ohio, and he's now the de facto head of the Republican Party, and he is obviously working overtime, not just raising billions through super PACs that don't have to declare who their donors are. You know, they're suppressing voters who are registered voters and who voted before. They have to prove who they are, but plutocrats giving to secret super PACs don't have to reveal who they are. That's the landscape that we have, and Karl Rove is obviously at it again. So my feeling is that Obama doesn't just have to win this election. He has to win it fairly substantially, because the closer it is, the more likely that Karl Rove will steal it.
Well, that's possible. You're absolutely right. But you also have to remember that in 2008, we learned our lesson. And the Obama campaign put together a massive field operation that was run in a very sophisticated manner. That field operation is even more sophisticated today. And it is on the ground in all the places where cheating can take place, and they are closely monitoring the situation. And I think, as you've noticed in the last couple of weeks, we've been winning most of the court cases against the voter suppression laws. Those laws are still on the books, and we're going to have to fight them again after the election, but it looks like in most cases they are not going to be allowed to impact this election. That's not to say we don't have to be vigilant against the kind of cheating you're describing. And we also have to be vigilant about the issue of money in politics. I mean, this election, more than any other in our history, demonstrates the corrosive aspects of unlimited contributions to political campaigns. And we have got to take on as a long-term priority getting money out of politics and having all elections be publicly financed with no private money involved at all. Only then are we going to have a government that it is truly representative of the people and able to be responsive to the issues that affect people.
Well, Bill Zimmerman, I thank you so much for joining us here today.
You're welcome, Ian. Glad to be here.
Again, I've been speaking with Bill Zimmerman, who is an author, longtime activist, and one of the nation's most experienced political media consultants and the co-founder of Zimmerman & Markman, Inc. Previously, he was a strategic communications consultant to MoveOn.org, and in the 1980s, he specialized in candidate races. His successful clients include Senator Tim Worth, Senator Gary Hart, and Governor Tony Anaya. He's the author of Troublemaker, a memoir from the front lines of the 60s. We're going to take a brief station break and be back talking about how the Democrats have failed to inform the public about how Wall Street is fleecing the average American at the gas pump and the kitchen table.
Don't need to change the future's eyes. You don't need to change.